Welcome and thank you for standing by. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. If you would like to ask a question during the question and answer session, please press star one on your touch-tone phone. Today's conference is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. Now I will turn the meeting over to Ms. Amy Montgomery, Training Coordinator.
Thank you, Corey. Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to today's webinar. My name is Amy Montgomery, and I'm one of the organizers for today's call. We really appreciate you taking the time out of your busy schedule to join us today. Today's webcast is presented by the Illinois Department of Human Services, Division of Mental Health, and the Illinois Mental Health Collaborative. The title of today's webcast is DHS-DMH in the Collaborative Contractual Overview Presentation. You will hear from a panel of speakers today, and before we begin the formal presentation, I would like to review with everyone a few helpful tools and housekeeping items for the online portion of the forum. If you happen to get disconnected from the audio portion, please call back into the same number you just dialed, 888-677-0065. The passcode is Illinois. The visual portion of this presentation is web-based. Of course, you can choose the audio portion only, but if you would like to log on to see the webinar presentation and PowerPoint, the logon information is located on the invite you received after you registered. If you are experiencing any problems with that particular link to join, you can also go to www.joinwebinar.com and enter the ID number, which is 857-293-402. There will be a designated question and answer portion towards the end of today's presentation. We ask attendees to hold their question until this designated question and answer period. The operator will then open up the lines for you at that time. And lastly, at the conclusion of the presentation today, we ask that you please complete the brief satisfaction survey that will appear when you close out on the online forum. It should take you less than 5 minutes to complete the survey, and we value your feedback. Without further ado, we will now begin the formal presentation. I would like to turn the call over to our first speaker for today, Mr. Scott Parmentier.
Good afternoon, everyone. As Amy said, my name is Scott Parmentier. I'm the Chief Executive Officer for the Illinois Mental Health Collaborative for Access and Choice. Just some quick background information. We wanted to put this training together because as we talk with a multitude of stakeholders within the mental health system of care, be that provider community, family members, consumers, or other stakeholders, there have been a multitude of questions that we are being faced with in terms of what is the collaborative's role, whose value options, what's the contract, things of that nature. So one of the things that we wanted to do was begin a series of back to basics, and one of those included just an overview of our contract, what we do here at the collaborative, and things of that nature. Some of you may have participated in trainings last week with our information technology staff and the Division of Mental Health talking about some of the IT functions that the collaborative provides and what we do. So as we get delving into that stuff, some of the things that we would like to talk about this afternoon in terms of our agenda is I'm going to do some quick introductions of our key staff. We'll talk about the Division of Mental Health, the ASO, and the Illinois Mental Health Collaborative for Access and Choice, also known as the Collaborative. We'll talk about our recovery and resilience functions. We will also talk about our clinical and medical services functions, compliance and quality management, and provider relations. So with that, I recruited my team of directors to go over some of their functional areas. So in addition to myself with us today, we have Bryce Goff, who is our Director of Recovery and Resilience. We also have Pat Palmer, who is our Director of Clinical Services, Dr. Todd Kasdan, our Director of Medical Services, Sean Wilson, our Director of Compliance, and Aisa Bell, our Director of Provider Relations. And as we go through the presentations this afternoon, we will dovetail into each of the functions. So first of all, in terms of back to basics, we wanted to talk about some of the roles. One of those being the role of the division, or DHS-DMH. They are, as we all know, the State Mental Health Authority. DHS-DMH is responsible for ensuring that those most in need have access to the appropriate mental health services that comply with federal and state statutes and regulations. They also ensure access for the most in need of mental health services and ensure that services meet standards of quality relative to mental health services. They're also ensuring prudent stewardship of taxpayer dollars. They're also the entity that establishes all the policies and procedures for the system of care. So how does an ASO or an administrative services organization come into play? The Illinois Mental Health Collaborative is such that we are the ASO. And what that is, or what we are, is a partnership between the Division of Mental Health and Value Options. And what we do is we help to improve and advance the mental health services within the state. The ASO was created to help DMH make the best use of limited resources and to serve people in need of mental health assistance. And above and all, we are committed to the recovery and resilience of children and adults with mental illnesses. So a lot of questions that we receive talk about what does the ASO do, and at a very high level, what we are is we're a health solutions company that's designed to ensure that the right services are provided to the right person at the right time in the right amount. It's very much a juggling act, and I think we attempt to do that, and we actually do that quite well. And as part of that, the collaborative is part of Value Options. Value Options is the overlying corporation that runs the collaborative with the partnership with the Division of Mental Health. So Value Options is in contract with DMH to provide the ASO services as the collaborative. So in terms of the contract, a lot of times we get questions about, well, when did that start? How long does it go? What's going on? What happened was a year and a half ago, there was a request for proposal that was put out by the state of Illinois. Value Options bid on that ASO contract, and we were awarded the contract. That contract is set to expire on June 30th, 2015. In addition to that three-year contract, there are 2 one-year contract extensions that may be exercised by DHS-DMH that could continue the contract until June 30th of 2017. So in terms of our offices and where we're located, we have 2 offices. One office is located in Chicago, and the second office is located in Springfield. In the Chicago office, we have all of our clinical and medical staff. We have our quality management staff. Part of our provider liaisons are here. We have recovery and resilience staff here. We have part of our IT systems here with our data management staff. They're located here in Springfield. We have recovery and resilience. We have compliance. We have provider relations. We have recovery. And that's pretty much how we're divided. We try to keep things divided so that we can have a better geographic coverage function throughout the state. So in terms of the contract, what do we really do in the contract? We have 6 differing functional areas or sets of deliverables that we perform to for each contract cycle. We have clinical functions. We have finance-related functions. We have management information systems, information technology functions. We have provider relations, quality management, and recovery and resilience. And this is where I would like to start bringing in our team to start talking about each of their functional areas. And so the first one that we're going to talk about are clinical operations. And with that, I'd like to turn that over to Patricia Palmer, our clinical director.
Thanks, Scott. Good afternoon, everybody. First, I would like to talk a little bit about the utilization management program and give you an overview of what that is. And it's, we call it UM, so when you hear me talk about UM, we're talking about utilization management. And the UM program is the vehicle through which DHS-DMH ensures that the individuals being served receive the services that are best suited to support their recovery needs and preferences, cost-effective services in the most appropriate treatment center setting, and services consistent with medical necessity criteria and evidence-based practices. It goes back to what Scott was saying earlier. We want to ensure that the right consumer receives the right services at the right time and in the right quantity. By implementing the UM program, DHS-DMH strives to achieve a balance between the needs, preferences, and well-being of persons in need of mental health services, demonstrated medical necessity, and the availability of resources. There are some guidelines that the UM program has acknowledged. First of all, UM is dynamic and evolutionary. As additional data, new research, and other new information arises with experience, the UM program continually evolves and changes. UM needs to be based on data. The UM program must use data to identify patterns of utilization, to work with clinicians to determine if the patterns and variations are desirable or not, and then work with providers to make any needed improvements. Individuals accessing services need to meet a consistent threshold of medical necessity statewide. The UM program needs to provide clear guidance for medical necessity decisions so that all individuals accessing services have consistent and equitable access to specific services. And finally, authorization must be clinically focused and conducted by qualified staff. Where authorization is determined to be necessary, it needs to be based on clinical information and reviewed by staff at the independent license level. So let's talk for a minute about the medical necessity criteria. The medical necessity criteria, otherwise known as MNC, are published by the Illinois Department of Human Services Division of Mental Health. You can find the criteria on the DHS website in the DHS-DMH Community Mental Health Provider Manual. They're all spelled out there. These criteria should be used by providers to guide you in making consistent admission, continuing service, and termination of service decisions for each individual consumer. Providers need to use the criteria consistently, regardless of whether or not DHS-DMH or its designee externally authorizes the service. And provider adherence to these criteria may be subject to post-payment review. So what services does the collaborative authorize? As you can see, there are several of them. Assertive Community Treatment, ACT, Community Support Team, CST, Community Support Group, CSG, Psychosocial Rehabilitation, PSR, Therapy Counseling, the Individual Care Grant, the ICG, Permanent Supportive Housing, PHS, which also includes the Williams Class members. And then there are the most recently added services. There's the Region 1 Crisis Care System, which includes inpatient CHIPS beds, Mental Health Crisis Residential, Substance Abuse Crisis Residential, and Acute Community Care, and then the Northwest Crisis Care System, which includes inpatient CHIPS beds, Mental Health Crisis Residential, and Acute Community Care. So what does the authorization process look like? First, the provider will contact the collaborative to request services. The collaborative clinical care managers, also known as CCMs, will review the submitted documents to make sure that they're adhering to the medical necessity criteria, and they take a look at that through the treatment plan goals, through status updates and progress, through rating scales. We use the LOCUS scoring for adults and the Ohio scales for children and adolescents. And then if the medical necessity criteria are met for the services being requested, the collaborative CCM will enter an authorization. Now I'd like to turn it over to our medical director, Dr. Todd Kasdan, who will talk about the review process.
Thank you, Pat. Good afternoon, everyone. What I'd like to do over the next few minutes is walk through the various authorization determination decision outcomes and the options that providers have when an adverse determination decision is issued, when a denial occurs. So, as Pat stated, if medical necessity is established, the request is authorized by the CCM and communicated to the provider. However, if medical necessity is not established, the CCM contacts the provider to seek clarification and/or offers consultation regarding the authorization criteria. Based on this, one of two of the following outcomes will result. Either the collaborative and the provider will reach mutual agreement with respect to next steps, additional information will be submitted for review or alternative services will be considered, etc. Or, if mutual agreement does not occur, the CCM will forward the request to a collaborative physician advisor, called a PA for short. This PA is a physician licensed in the state of Illinois and board certified in the specialty of psychiatry. The PA will review the request and, based on the information submitted, either authorize or deny authorization. Now, as you've heard before, the goal and our aim here at the collaborative is not to deny authorization requests, but rather to ensure that the right services are provided in the right amounts to the right person at the right time, all based on the medical necessity criteria as published by the DMH. That said, if and when denials do occur, providers do have options. So in the case of a clinical denial of authorization, a reconsideration request, or an appeal, depending on the service or level of care, may be initiated. This review will be conducted by a PA, as defined previously. The individual conducting the review will not be the same PA who issued the original denial and will not be a subordinate of the PA who issued the original denial. The review outcome result will be either an overturn of the original denial decision or an uphold of the original denial decision. In addition to clinical reconsideration requests and appeals, there's a somewhat similar mechanism for those matters which result in an administrative denial. Administrative denials are issued based on reasons other than lack of medical necessity, and some examples include issues such as the consumer not being eligible due to their geographic residency, or the authorization request being submitted outside of the required time frame. Additional details and specificity regarding denials, reconsideration requests, appeals, and other related items can be viewed for each service and level of care by accessing your provider manual. That said, I'd like to now turn over the floor to Bryce Goff, the Collaborative's Director of Recovery and Resilience. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Dr. Todd and Pat. Hello, everyone. My name is Bryce Goff. I'm the Director of Recovery and Resilience for the Illinois Mental Health Collaborative, and it's a pleasure to work with you all in facilitating a more recovery-oriented system where persons served and providers partner together to help persons recover and live a fulfilling life in the community. I'm going to talk to you a little bit about the concepts of recovery, which, of course, will be familiar concepts to you all. In fact, consumers, providers, and the Division of Mental Health came together several years ago and agreed to a vision, a new vision for the Illinois mental health system, which is the expectation is recovery. All persons with mental illnesses can recover and participate fully in a life in the community. So I'm going to touch on a few more of the specifics that are connected to that idea of recovery. Person-centered care, of course, is a central focus, and making sure that we're helping individuals and not merely making decisions on their behalf, but involving them in decisions in their own care, so they can achieve personal goals as opposed to merely managing symptoms. Also, family support and involvement are key. And hope is ultimately the cornerstone of recovery. People who have mental illnesses form a partnership with their providers. They should have a voice in their care. They should be involved in guiding their treatment planning process and use their individual strengths to achieve their own goals. So how do we promote recovery through the organizational design here at the Collaborative? Well, the Collaborative builds upon and works with the established Department of Human Services, Division of Mental Health, Recovery Services Development Group that have a statewide and a regional presence across Illinois. The Collaborative draws on Value Options' extensive experience in empowering consumers around the country. So on the national level, we have Clarence Jordan, who is Value Options' Vice President for Recovery and Wellness. He's in the senior level of leadership in the corporation, helping to ensure that there is a recovery focus at Value Options. Clarence is a national recovery and consumer movement leader who provides training and consultation for providers, service center employees, and persons served, and is involved in facilitating integration of recovery and wellness principles throughout Value Options. And I have to say, as a director of recovery within Illinois, one of the greatest things about working and being connected to Value Options is having other directors of recovery in other states and counties that I can interact with and say, how are you empowering persons served in your location, and what can we learn from you? So there's great learning across different contexts, and I think that only benefits the person served in Illinois. More on promoting recovery through organizational design. We have certified recovery support specialists, or CRSS, at the service center level. There's myself. I'm a director of recovery on the management team here at the Collaborative. We also have peer and family support specialists who facilitate consumer communications and education and provide consultation and support to the community and providers. We do community training on recovery with providers, persons served, and family members. We help to ensure that there are intentional mechanisms for consumer input into program design and management. And one of the most rewarding things that I've seen in my work here at the Collaborative is just how involved persons served are in designing the programs of the Collaborative. We involve persons with lived recovery experience in development and implementation of initiatives. Certified recovery support specialists are employed throughout the organization. And community education about mental illness and recovery is also one of the mechanisms that we provide. I'm going to talk a little bit more about those mechanisms or recovery integration and initiatives in Illinois. First, you've probably heard of the Warm Line. That's a source of peer support by telephone that's run by my staff, the peer and family support specialists. And so we provide emotional support, recovery education, self-advocacy support by telephone. But we also provide, I think, a valuable customer service function in referring folks to providers who aren't yet connected to mental health services in Illinois. Another thing we do is are known as the Recovery and Empowerment Statewide Calls. We have these monthly teleconferences where, on average, we have about 500 persons served call in. We'll do a half hour of education with them on a recovery-oriented topic that they've identified, and then we do an hour of Q&A with them. So if you haven't had a chance to listen into those yet, I'd strongly recommend it. It's a good way to get to know many of the concerns and priorities of persons served, and also get to hear us support one another through that process. Another initiative that the Recovery and Resilience team is a part of here in Illinois are the Recovery Services Development Snapshots. Now, we've done something like 7 of these across the state so far and are continuing this initiative this year, where we go out to providers and do focus groups with both persons served and provider staff to get a sense for the recovery orientation of the mental health center and to see how we can be supportive in advancing the good work that you all are already doing out there. We provide the annual CRSS trainings, and this year did a provider forum where provider leadership could come together and think tank across what are the issues and the values of hiring CRSS and working with them effectively. You've probably seen the Recovery and Empowerment Handbooks this year. They're coming out in purple to your centers, and probably already have. If you haven't received one, feel free to call us at the Collaborative, and we'll get those out to you. But they're a tool for empowering persons served with good information to make good decisions in their care. Briefly, we're involved with the RAP, or Wellness Recovery Action Plan, training and support initiatives. And finally, we provide recovery-oriented consultation to all collaborative departments. So whether that's clinical or compliance or provider relations or any of the group folks you're going to hear from today, we work with them in their departments to help to provide that person-centered input and making sure that there's a focus on recovery throughout the collaborative's function. So with that, I want to thank you for listening to my portion, and I'm going to go ahead and pass this on to Sean Wilson, Director of Compliance. Sean?
Thanks, Bryce. Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Sean Wilson, as Bryce has stated, and I'm the Compliance Director here with the Illinois Mental Health Collaborative for Access and Choice. My department consists of one other staff person, and her name is Bobby Fracassi. She's our Quality Management Specialist and Resolution Coordinator. In discussing what my department handles here at the Collaborative, there are several quality management functions that we're responsible for. These functions, in turn, ensure consistent quality of our operations and also of our regulation compliance. Other QM functions ensure VO's contractual obligations to our Illinois client, again, the Department of Human Services Division of Mental Health, or the DMH. So it's easiest to think of my scope of responsibility as falling under two main and often overlapping areas. The first area would cover general quality management functions as related to the complaints, grievances, and appeals process for the collaborative, as well as our contractual compliance with the DMH. The second area would cover some of the more general compliance functions, as I'm also the local privacy and ethics officer for Value Options in Illinois. What this means is that I have oversight regarding our compliance with all applicable state and federal laws and regulations, such as HIPAA, HITECH, mandated reporting, et cetera, as well as oversight in fostering an ethical atmosphere throughout all levels of our organization and taking the lead in resolving ethics-related issues within our workplace here. A responsibility prominent to both providers and the consumer community here in Illinois, and as mentioned on my previous slide, is oversight of the complaints, grievances, and appeals process by my department, again, compliance and quality management. Bobby Fracassi, our resolution coordinator in Illinois, is integral in handling these complaints as they are received by us. So just speaking at a high level, the collaborative receives and processes consumer and family-generated complaints regarding DMH contracted service providers. Once these are received, Bobby adheres to a formal protocol as established by the DMH and VO for processing and resolving each of these individual cases. This process has established that all allegations are, first and foremost, taken seriously. Secondly, that they're reviewed in an objective and timely manner and thirdly, that the ensuing results and outcomes are communicated back to the necessary parties, always including the complainant. So there are two main avenues through which a consumer or family member, parent, or guardian can file an official complaint with the collaborative. One way is to call, and the number is listed in front of you. That number is 866-359-7953, and file your complaint or grievance with our resolution coordinator directly. The second method would be to send in your complaint via mail to the address again in front of you. That address would be the Illinois Mental Health Collaborative, sent to the attention of our resolution coordinator at P.O. Box 06559 in Chicago, Illinois. Zip is 60606. And that concludes my proportion, or my portion of the presentation, so I'd like to now turn it over to Aisa Bell. Aisa?
Thanks, Sean. Good afternoon. My name is Aisa Bell, and I'm the Director for Provider Relations. We will now go over and present to you the Provider Relations Department functions. We have 10 staff in our PR department. We have Chris McConkie. She is our clinical coordinator, and she is responsible for the supervision of the regional liaisons and the clinical portion of our department. We have a total of 7 liaisons, 4 in Chicago and 3 in the Springfield office. All regional liaisons are assigned to a specific region. We also have our training coordinator, who many of you may have had some interaction with, either by phone or by email. And she is responsible for all the coordination of the provider training. She is also the person who makes the initial provider notification calls and sends out notices to the provider regarding training. Provider relations has 4 functions: training and TA, provider monitoring, management of the website, and the support of the provider database verification maintenance, most commonly referred to as the PDV process. Let's talk about training and TA. As I said earlier, we coordinate and facilitate the training and technical assistance. These trainings are coordinated and completed by webinar, teleconference, face-to-face at the time of the on-site review, or individually as requested by the provider. Our face-to-face trainings on-site are usually to assist providers in improving documentation process. The other trainings coordinated by us are merely just to set up the logistics of the training that are carried out by our other departments. Our second functional area are the monitoring reviews. This year, we are responsible for 5 different reviews. Those are the post-payment, ACT, CST, certification, and ICG reviews. Let's now take a look at a brief overview of each of these areas, beginning with post-payment review, which is referred to as PPR. The PPR process evaluates provider's compliance with 11 specific Rule 132 items. Let me note here that although Rule 132 has had recent revisions, the 11 items that we are looking at are the exact same items. Thus, the tool has not changed. There are 2 types of post-payment reviews: the standard post-payment review and the ICG post-payment review. The length of those reviews are 1 to 2 days, depending on the number of claims reviewed. The number of claims depends upon the number of post-payment reviews the provider is receiving and the number of claims the provider has submitted during the billing period. Let's talk about the billing period. The billing period that we pull claims, if reviewed last year, is 60 days after last review, up to the date the claims are pulled. The billing period in which we pull claims if not reviewed last year is 12 months back and up to the date claims are pulled. If the provider requires a plan of improvement, or POI, the DMH contract managers will follow through to ensure the POI has been submitted. Let's note here, the same tools are used for both the PPR, the standard PPR, and the ICG PPR. If the provider is receiving both types of post-payment reviews, there are separate reports that are left with the provider for each type of review. The ACT, Assertive Community Treatment Review, measures a provider's delivery of ACT services to the Fidelity model, and the typical length is 1 full day per team being reviewed. With a few minor modifications, the Dartmouth Assertive Community Treatment Scale, DACS, is used. The CST review measures a provider's delivery of CST services according to the definition and intent of service. The typical length is one full day per team being reviewed. The review is conducted using a tool developed by a work group of DMH and the Illinois PR team. Certification evaluates compliance of Rule 132 on a much broader review than PPR. The typical length of these reviews are approximately 3 days. The reviewers use an established tool from DHS, BALC, and BALC office follows through with the provider post-review. ICG documentation reviews. These reviews focus on service documentation and the rehabilitative nature of services provided in coordination with other entities and includes a review of the provider's policies and procedures related to elopement. The typical length of this review is 1 day. The review is conducted using a tool developed by a work group that encompasses DMH, the CNA office, and the collaborative Illinois PR team. Follow-through on the post-review is done by DHS, the CNA office. In addition to the five reviews that I've mentioned, we also play a support role in the IPS review, which is individual placement and support. So in partnership with DHS DMH and DHS DOORS, we provide assistance with support employment fidelity monitoring up to 33 provider programs. Okay, moving along to the provider database verification. The purpose of the provider database verification is to ensure that the data in our system is accurate and up to date. We have two processes in place. We have an on-site verification process and an off-site verification process. The on-site process are for those providers who are scheduled to receive a monitoring visit. Once Amy, our training coordinator, makes the notification call, she will then send the PDV that contains all of our information. Any changes or corrections should be made and given to the reviewers at the exit conference. This gives the provider approximately 1 week to make the changes. Those providers not receiving a monitoring visit will go through the off-site process, and your contract manager for your region will get in touch with you and follow through. Today's presentation will be available on our website. And on a side note, the PPR guidelines and protocols have all been updated, so please take a look at the site. In order to access the information, follow the outline on this slide. That concludes provider relations portion of this presentation. I would now like to turn the call over to Scott.
Thank you, Aisa. And I'd also take a moment to say thank you to Pat Palmer, Dr. Todd Kasdan, Bryce Goff, Sean Wilson as well, for taking time out of their day to talk with all of us on the phone and via this webinar. I can't stress enough one of the things that Aisa talked about, and that is our website. Our website, we keep current and up-to-date with a wealth of information. And that's also a source for system of care stakeholders within the DMH system to go through and peruse our website. We have information on there about who to call if there's claims issues, who to call if there's registration issues, information about recovery. There is a multitude of stuff. We understand that everybody's schedules are packed, they're busy, we're all probably working with limited resources, but it's really important if you have 5 or 10 minutes to go out and peruse our website. Additionally, if you can't find what you need on the website, feel free to contact us directly. I think all of you have our contact information. It's also on our website as well. And you can feel free, if you have my direct information, you can feel free to contact me directly. I'm happy to be of an assistance as where possible and where needed to make sure that the stakeholders get what they need within the system of care. Because at the end of the day, we're here to be a resource to both the Division of Mental Health and to the provider community and to the consumers within the state of Illinois, as well as all the other stakeholders. So customer service is one of our key goals and priorities, and that's one of the things that we pride ourselves on. So with that, I again want to say thank you all for taking time out of your busy itineraries to spend some time with us this afternoon. And at this point, I'd like to turn it back over to Amy Montgomery to facilitate our Q&A portion of the webinar.
Thank you, Scott. At this time, operator, we would like to open the lines for questions.
Thank you. At this time, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your touchtone phone. You will be prompted to record your name. Please unmute your line and do so when prompted. To withdraw your request, you may press star 2. Again, to ask your question, please press star 1 at this time. One moment, please. At this time, I'm showing that we have no questions. Brenda Goines, you may ask your question. Brenda, your line is open. Please ask your question.
Yes, I'm sorry. That was very quick. The question that we have, and it's really just to verify information, if the last PPR review has been longer than 1 year, do we understand then that the next review will be cover records 12 months prior to the date as opposed to going back to the two-year period?
Yes, we'll only be looking at the last 12 months of claims.
Okay, so the date that the next review would be done and the preceding 12 months.
Yeah, 12 months from when we pull the claim run, and we do the claim run maybe about 2 weeks before we are going to go out on the review.
Okay, thank you.
Bill Nelson, you may ask your question.
Thank you. I think this may be directed to Scott. We continue to have really some significant delays and discrepancies in getting our registrations approved through HFS. And in our attempt to troubleshoot that, we often get referred back and forth between HFS and the collaborative a number of times. And we are not then solving our problem. So I'm wondering, when that happens, who should we be talking to really try to pin it down?
You can call me directly. My direct phone number is 312-453-9004. And we will get it queued up to see what we can pull in the system and provide you with the information that you need.
Okay.
Also, by chance, were you able to sit in the IT session last week?
Yes, we had a full complement of staff here last week.
Okay. So, because that may have provided some additional information as well in terms of who to contact, but I'm happy to take that on personally.
Okay. We will be in touch with you then, Scott. Thanks.
Absolutely.
Once again, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star 1 and record your name at this time. One moment, please. Kim McManus, you may ask your question.
Hi, I'm so sorry I missed the IT session last week. Is it, in fact, on the website, re-recorded, so that we can have access to it?
Yes, it is.
Excellent. Thank you so much.
At this time, there are no further questions.
Operator, we'll just wait a few more seconds to see if other questions come in.
No problem. As a reminder, press star 1 to ask your question.
are you ready to conclude if there's no more questions in the queue?
Absolutely. If we have addressed all the correct questions that are out there, then we can conclude for the day.
All right. Thank you. If there are no more questions in the queue, then that will conclude our call for today. I would like to remind the audience that today's call audio and PowerPoint will be posted. It will be under the Provider Resources heading on the Provider Information page that is located on the Collaborative's website. It will be in MP3 format and available for download within 2 to 3 business days. I would also like to remind everyone that we value your feedback, so please take a few minutes to complete the brief survey that will appear when you close out of the online forum today. Corey, you can please push the speakers through to post-conference, and you may now disconnect the main line.